3. And that one idea of mine saved the U.S. Air Force over $3 million. Frank was sitting on a stack of lumber, talking to Del Stewart, who was leaning against the side of his pickup truck, drinking out of a thermos. So far, both times we'd come by to check on the progress of our house, Frank had been lounging around and talking. Meanwhile, the house wasn't getting built. After telling us that he could put the whole prefab home together in less than a month, he'd only managed to construct the skeleton of the cinder block foundation in the first 9 days. Del was the man Frank had hired to help him, a lean, taciturn man with long, greasy hair and a wardrobe that seemed to consist of a single pair of dirty jeans and a faded Lynyrd Skynyrd t-shirt. He looked like the kind of guy who would rob a house rather than build one. We walked up, and I could tell from the way my dad said, "Hey, Frank, how's it going?" that he was getting frustrated. The first time we'd driven over from California, 4 days after they'd delivered the building materials, we'd expected to see the frame of the house constructed. After all, as Frank said, building a prefab house was like putting together a model. All the parts were there. They just had to be joined. But when we arrived, Frank and Del had only managed to clear a section of the lot where the house was to stand, and string some twine between stakes to mark the area. This time, only my dad and I had made the drive, Billy and my mom choosing to stay home rather than make the 9-hour trip to Randall. "I thought you'd be a little farther along," my dad said diplomatically. "We've been working on the plumbing," Frank assured us. "Right now, we're just waiting for the building inspector to sign off on it. Then we can go on to the next step and start on the frame." He showed us where he and Del had installed a septic system and put in a main water pipe that went out to the street. In addition, they'd cleared a section of dirt for a driveway and built a culvert over the ditch. Seen in that light, Frank had accomplished quite a bit, but there was still no way that the house would be done in another 2.5 weeks. Not at this speed. As it happened, the building inspector arrived as Frank and my dad were talking. He did indeed approve the plumbing, which allayed my dad's fears, and let him know that Frank did know what he was doing, and allowed Frank and Del to start work on the frame. My dad and I stood around and watched for a while, my dad even helping a bit, before the two of us went off to have lunch. We returned to California the next day, feeling good, knowing the house was finally going to be built. It took nearly 2 months to finish construction, and the summer was practically over by the time Frank called to tell us that the work was done and we could move in. My mom had been searching for cheap or secondhand items with which we could furnish our vacation home. Getting an old dresser out of Grandma and Grandpa's garage, some bed frames from the Salvation Army, mattresses from a discount warehouse, our old coffee table that we'd stored in our garage, my Aunt Alice's discarded couch. Though there were still plenty of things we needed, we rented a U-Haul trailer, piled in what we had, and took off for Arizona. Our first impression was that the house still wasn't finished. The model home had been a dark redwood color, but the A-frame on our lot was the pale yellow peach of unpainted pine. Frank had obviously been waiting for our arrival, because he was crossing the street from his own house, keys in hand, as we got out of the car. He handed the keys to my dad. "She's all yours." He began explaining which key was for which door, but Billy and I were already rushing forward. Peeking in the front windows, we saw an empty living room, the kitchen beyond, and the stairway that led up to our loft. Mom, Dad, and Frank were soon behind us, and with a loud "ta-da," my dad unlocked and opened the door. We walked inside. The walls were made out of cardboard. At least that's what it looked like to us. Frank told us it was drywall. "Where's the paneling?" my dad asked. "The model home had paneling." Frank shrugged. "I don't know what to tell you. This is what got delivered. If I'd known there was supposed to be paneling, I would have asked about it. But I assumed that this was the way it came and you were going to finish it yourselves." "We don't know how to do that," my dad said. "I'll show you," Frank promised. "It's easy." We stood in the middle of our small, empty living room, looking around. Not only did our vacation house look like its walls had not been put up, but the floor was plywood. None of us could remember what the floor of the model home had looked like, whether it had had carpeting or tile or linoleum, but it had not been bare wood.
"I don't know what to tell you," Frank said when we pointed this out to him. "Maybe there was some sort of deluxe package offered, but the kit you bought had no finishing materials provided at all."
There were sinks, however, and a toilet, and a shower-bath combo. There was even an electric stove installed, although no refrigerator. Upstairs, in our loft, the deficiencies weren't quite as noticeable. The floor was still bare plywood, but our side walls consisted of the slanting A-frame ceiling, and actually looked pretty good. The front of the loft overlooked the living room below, and had a bare wooden railing, so it was only the back wall, with its single small window, that had the cardboard-covered drywall. Frank invited us over for dinner that night, and my mom gratefully accepted. We had no groceries, no refrigerator, and with all the unpacking we had to do, dinner would have been, of necessity, a pretty makeshift affair. But Frank said his wife Irene was making hamburgers, and told us we could come over whenever we wanted.
"Whenever you get hungry,"
is how he put it. And that gave us time to unpack the U-Haul, get our bed set up, and arrange what little furniture we'd brought. Even my parents had not realized how many things were needed to stock a vacation home. And after a long night sleeping on bare mattresses, we'd forgotten sheets, we went out to the Randall Cafe for breakfast and spent the rest of the day buying the day-to-day necessities we'd need if we were going to keep living in the 20th century. One shocking omission was a television. And here, both Billy and I put our feet down. While it was cool having our own vacation house, there was no way we were going to spend the remainder of the summer without a TV. My parents must have felt the same way, because one of the first places we went that morning was the local thrift store, where we bought a used black and white set. It was only temporary, my dad promised. As soon as we had a chance, we'd go down to the valley and charge a new color one. Billy and I would inherit the black and white set for our room upstairs. We could only get two stations, Channel 12, the NBC affiliate out of Phoenix, and Channel 4, the NBC affiliate out of Flagstaff. But NBC had some good shows on in the mid-1980s, so we were pretty happy. Frank did indeed teach my dad how to tape up and plaster over the sheets of drywall, and the entire family ended up painting both the inside and outside of the house. We also bought peel-and-stick tile that we laid down on the floors. By the time we finished all this work, the summer was pretty much over. "Not much of a vacation," I grumbled.
"Consider it a working vacation," my mom said.
"It builds character,"
my dad joked. But then he wrapped an arm around my shoulder, squeezing it. "We'll make it up next summer." There were 3 days left before we were going back to California, and Billy and I spent them exploring. We hiked up the hill behind our little neighborhood and found what appeared to be an Indian ruin at the top. There were several square foundations made from rocks and adobe, and though we didn't find the arrowheads we were hoping for, we did pick up some black and brown pottery shards that we put in our pockets. We also walked into town, with our dad's blessing, but against our mom's wishes, and with the allowance we'd been given for all our work the past weeks, bought ourselves cherry slushes from the Dairy Queen. Billy also bought a map of Arizona ghost towns in a tourist shop. I thought it was a complete waste of money, but he tacked it to the sloping ceiling above his bed so he could look at it as he fell asleep. What we didn't see, either in town or on our street, were other kids. There had to be some, but from our perspective, Randall seemed like a retirement community. There were old people everywhere. And the two boys we did see, down by the Circle K, were tough-looking and older than us, wearing cat hats and cowboy boots, and we walked a long way around just to avoid them. On our way home, someone honked at us, and startled, we turned to see Frank's pickup truck. He offered us a ride, and Billy and I just looked at each other. The dangers of hitchhiking had been drilled into us ever since we could cross a street, and we'd been warned never to take rides from strangers. Frank wasn't exactly a stranger, but neither of us had ever gotten into the car of anyone besides our parents, or the parents of our friends, and that made this a monumental decision.
Would we get in trouble if we rode with Frank? Would our parents get mad at us because we didn't get their approval first? In the end, we decided to keep walking. And Frank laughed, said, "Suit yourselves," and drove off. I looked over at Billy and saw that he was glad we hadn't let Frank give us a ride. I wasn't sure why, but I was too. We were both tired of walking, but somehow, even exercise seemed preferable to being stuck in a pickup cab with our neighbor from across the street. We didn't discuss it, though, and walked the rest of the way back in silence. Frank's pickup was parked in his driveway when we arrived, and Frank himself was standing on the gravel in front of our house, talking to our dad, who called us over. "I just want you to know," he said, putting one arm around each of our shoulders, "that if Frank offers you a ride, it's okay. We know him. He's not a stranger." Dad, as usual, had known exactly why we'd done what we'd done, and we nodded to show that we understood. Although when Billy and I glanced at each other, it was clear that neither of us regretted not accepting the ride. Frank's last name was Watkins, but for some reason, he wouldn't let either me or Billy call him Mr. Watkins. He wanted us to address him as Frank, the way adults did. And after a short disagreement the first time it came up, my dad gave in. It was the first time we'd ever called a grown-up by his first name, and it definitely felt weird. But then, Frank was weird. We were lying in our beds in the loft that night, each of us staring up at the slanted ceiling. My parents had invited Frank and his wife over for dinner, and they'd stayed so long that Billy and I had had to go to bed before they left. Downstairs, we could hear Frank telling my parents in detail how the town council had asked him to help design and build an addition to the town hall. Eventually, goodbyes were said, the front door opened, and there were footsteps and voices on the wooden deck as my parents walked outside with Frank and his wife.
"Finally, he's gone,"
Billy whispered. I hadn't been completely sure until then that he was still awake.
"Frank?"
I whispered back.
"Yeah."
We were silent for a moment.
"I don't like him,"
Billy said.
"He stares."
I knew exactly what he meant, but I was a little surprised that my brother had picked up on that. The truth was that Frank had an unnerving tendency to look at you for too long, both before and after he answered a question you'd asked him. It was a disturbing habit, and for some reason, it made me think of an alien trying to be human. There seemed to be an incomprehension in that gaze, a sense that he was attempting to access information that would indicate the proper way to behave, as though he didn't know how to respond in a human manner. It was a ridiculous idea that I knew made no sense. But the feeling was there, and the thought occurred to me that since he obviously wasn't an alien, maybe he was crazy. The idea scared me, because I honestly believed it could be true. As strange as Frank was, however, it was actually his wife Irene who haunted my nightmares. I wasn't sure why. She was a nice woman. Around adults, she seemed to round off Frank's rough edges, and with kids, she had kind of a grandmotherly air. In my dreams, though, Irene Watkins was just creepy. In real life, she was thin and old and wrinkled. But all of those features were exaggerated by my imagination. And in my nightmares, she was a hideous crone, whose decrepit visage chilled my spine. In one dream, I had awakened in the middle of the night, and Billy was gone. My parents weren't in the house, so Billy was my responsibility, and I ran down from the loft and through the small house searching for him. He was nowhere to be found, but I heard a noise outside, and when I pulled aside the curtains and looked through the window, I saw him running across the street to Frank's. The house was dark, but I could sort of see it in the moonlight, and the front door was wide open. Billy ran inside, and in that instant, the two upstairs windows lit up, the front of the house turning into a cubist version of Irene's face. The light in the right window flicked on and off like a winking eye, and the dark doorway widened and grew until it had turned into her toothless mouth, smiling malevolently at me. from somewhere inside, I heard my brother screaming in terror. Then I woke up. Another time, I was dreaming, but I thought I was awake. And I looked at the window between my bed and Billy's and saw Irene's wrinkled face floating in the air outside, staring in at me. By the light of day, however, Irene was as nice as could be. And whenever I thought about my nighttime fears, I felt embarrassed. I even felt sorry for Irene, because Frank was such a domineering, overbearing personality, and I thought she deserved someone nicer. Still, even though I liked having a vacation house, and I liked Arizona, it was definitely something of a relief when we returned to California and the real world.